Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello and welcome back to the program that helps you improve your American English skills. We come to you every day with interesting stories from around the world, and we present them at a slower speed with words that are easier to understand. We will begin today with big news from this nation's highest court. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that same-sex couples have the right to marry anywhere in the country. Many Americans are celebrating the decision. Others, including the Chief Justice, say the ruling violates the U.S. Constitution and abuses the power of the Supreme Court. Before the ruling last week, gay and lesbian couples could legally marry in 36 states and Washington, D.C. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court has extended that right across the country. The ruling means the remaining 14 states must soon stop enforcing bans on same-sex marriage. This Supreme Court ruling is often called a landmark decision, since it affects so many people across the country. For more, we turn to Kelly Jean Kelly.
Five of the Supreme Court justices support the decision. Four oppose it. The majority ruling says denying same-sex couples the right to marry hurts them. It shows disrespect and gives them a lower place in society than opposite-sex couples, the five supporting justices say. They add that the Constitution requires state laws to provide equal protection to everyone who lives there. The four justices who oppose the decision include the Chief Justice, John Roberts. Mr. Roberts disagrees so strongly that he read his remarks out loud. He says that all Americans who support expanding same-sex marriage should celebrate Friday's decision. The ruling, he notes, offers benefits to more people and permits same-sex partners to show their love and commitment. But, Mr. Roberts says, Americans should not celebrate the decision as a victory for the U.S. Constitution. Mr. Roberts believes five lawyers on the Supreme Court do not have the right to decide to permit same-sex marriage in all states. Instead, he says, the people should decide the issue in a democratic process. In Washington, D.C., many are quickly answering the decision. Tony Perkins is the president of the D.C.-based Family Research Council. The organization seeks to protect the idea of marriage between a man and a woman. Mr. Perkins wrote on the social media site Twitter that the ruling is a shocking abuse of power and will never be accepted. President Barack Obama also shared his thoughts on Twitter. He welcomes the ruling, calling it a big step forward in our march toward equality. For many activists, Friday's decision is the final achievement of more than 20 years of gay rights-related court cases. Outside the Supreme Court building, hundreds gathered to celebrate. They chanted, "Love has won," and sang the U.S. National Anthem. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. On Miriam Guardsbane's 9th birthday, 2 years ago, her aunt gave money to a group that cares for elephants. The woman, who lives in Kenya, told the group she was giving the money to celebrate Miriam's birthday. Miriam and her mother then visited Africa to learn how that money was helping to support elephants. Miriam fell in love with the animals and wanted to help save them. Christopher Jones Cruz reports on Miriam Guardsbane's efforts to help the world's biggest land animals.
A few months after visiting Africa, Miriam watched How I Became an Elephant, a documentary about the mistreatment of elephants in Thailand and a young girl's campaign to save them. Miriam decided she wanted to launch her own effort to raise money to save elephants. She recently joined about 12 other students in an art center at the Friends School in Sandy Springs, Maryland. They made elephants from clay and decorated them.
I'm going to put things on it, like a saddle or and people on it.
This part is just the different ways you can make them and how far you can go with your creativity.
The children were spending part of their spring break, a time when classes are not held, to help Miriam Guardsbane raise money to save elephants. Last year, Miriam created a group she called They Deserve to Be Free after seeing a program that showed young elephants being abused in Thailand.
We call it crushing because it's supposed to crush their soul. And what they do is they take a baby elephant, they put it, like they strangle it with ropes, they put it into this very small thing, they don't give it food or water for days, and they beat it with nails and hooks, and they're really mean to it, and it's just struggling, trying to get out, but they won't let it get out, and once it stops struggling, that means its soul is crushed.
Miriam is working to make money for an activist who operates Elephant Nature Park in Thailand. The park is a sanctuary, a place where elephants rescued from the tourism industry and illegal logging operations can live. She asked her friends to give money to the park rather than giving her birthday gifts. She made and sold baked goods and made signs about elephant abuse. She also created a plan to make and sell clay elephants. She asked her art teacher to help her make the elephants. Kate Santorianos opened her art studio to Miriam and her friends on weekends and during the school's spring break so they could make the clay elephants. She even gave them the clay.
To have a young student, instead of going to the mall or shopping, but wanting to spend her time for another cause, is what we all should aspire to.
Ms. Santorianos says the students are learning more than just how to make an elephant from clay. She says they are learning about elephants, Thailand and the ivory trade. And she says they are learning about clay and the technique. Miriam says she is lucky because her mother and her art teacher support her. Arlene Guardsbane is a veterinarian, a doctor who cares for animals. She and Miriam traveled to Kenya and Thailand so they could see elephants. The two cared for rescued elephants for weeks. Dr. Guardsbane says her daughter is serious about helping the animals.
She wants to make sure that she is educating people as to what is happening to the elephants, both in the United States and in Thailand.
Dr. Guardsbane says what her daughter is doing is making her a little bit more mature. She says Miriam now knows a lot more about animals and what is happening to them. Miriam says she is proud of her work and happy she can help elephants. Recently, she and her friends began selling their clay elephants at a local farmers market. She says she has sold about 180 of them. Last year, she sold about $2,000 worth of them and sent all of that money to the Elephant Nature Park in Thailand. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
You are listening to Learning English Programs on the Voice of America, Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Environment and Science Report. Could saving money reduce the spread of HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus? A new study finds protecting people from financial hardship may reduce their likelihood of risky behaviors that spread the virus. Kelly Jones is an economist at the International Food Policy Research Institute. She says lack of rainfall is usually the main reason for financial bad news in rural areas of sub-Sahara Africa. Most people there depend on agriculture to earn money. For the study, Ms. Jones and her colleagues compared rainfall patterns over the past 10 years to HIV rates in villages in 19 African countries. She says her research team made a surprising discovery about droughts, the periods during which there was very little or no rainfall. They found that the more droughts an area has had recently can predict a higher level of HIV infection in the community. In fact, the number of HIV cases was 11% higher for every drought. The researcher said the most likely explanation for this was that people were dealing with the crisis by trading sex for financial support. That raised their risk of HIV, the virus blamed for the disease AIDS. Kelly Jones says the researchers looked at the groups of individuals with the highest HIV rates, women farmers and non-farming men.
That does suggest some pairing of the women who are experiencing the income shock with the men who are least affected by that income shock.
Other research shows that drought in Africa may be linked to crime and political unrest. Edward Miguel is an economist at the University of California at Berkeley. He was not part of the new study, but he has examined the issue. He says the economic problems caused by drought do not just lead to social or political unrest. He says they also have a powerful effect on the health of community members. Ms. Jones says better ways to deal with the issue could include easier methods for opening bank savings accounts and better access to credit. Another way is weather-based crop insurance system, programs to protect farmers from crop losses. Ms. Jones adds that it is also important to urge farmers to grow more drought-tolerant crops. She is now studying whether helping at-risk women increase their savings could lower their likelihood of HIV infection. And that's the Environment and Science Report. I'm Marcia James.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about the administration of the 39th President of the United States, Jimmy Carter. It is January 20th, 1977, Inauguration Day. America's newly elected president, Jimmy Carter, is on his way to the White House after his swearing-in ceremony at the Capitol building. But the new president is not riding in a car, he is walking. His wife, Rosalind, and his daughter, Amy, walk with him. Crowds along Pennsylvania Avenue cheer. Bands play. On this cold day in Washington, Americans look to the future. Watergate, the crisis that led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon, is several years in the past. The Vietnam War is history, too. Republican Gerald Ford served the remaining years of Nixon's term. Many people believe he brought respect and order back to the government. Yet he lost the office to Democrat Jimmy Carter in the election of 1976. The nation still has problems. Unemployment is high. So is inflation. But the future of the nation looks bright. Jimmy Carter feels sure about his future, too. On the day before his inauguration, he said,
I do feel that the people of this nation, and I think the entire world, wish me well and want to see me succeed as president. And that gives me a sense of reassurance and confidence. I think I'm ready now to be president.
During the election campaign, Carter often said he would be different from other presidents. He told voters he was not a member of the Washington political establishment, so he would do things in his own independent way. Carter was from Georgia, in the deep south of the United States. There had not been a president born in the South in more than 100 years. Carter studied nuclear engineering and attended the United States Naval Academy. He planned to stay in the Navy. Then his father died, and he decided to return to Georgia to operate the family peanut farm. Carter began his political life on the committee that supervised schools in his hometown of Plains, Georgia. He also served in other local offices. In 1966, he failed to win the Democratic nomination for governor of Georgia. For the next 4 years, he traveled around the state gathering support. He won the next election. As governor, Carter earned praise for reorganizing the state government. He also reformed state programs dealing with prisons and mental health care. In 1972, he offered himself as a candidate for vice president with presidential candidate George McGovern, but the Democratic Party chose someone else. Carter did not wait long to begin his next political move. He would try to win the Democratic presidential nomination in 1976. Jimmy Carter was hardly known outside the state of Georgia. Political experts gave him little chance. Even his mother was surprised to learn that he wanted to be president. President of what? She asked. But the farmer and former governor had a plan. He would try to win his party's primary elections in the South. He believed this would give him enough support at the party convention to win the nomination.
Other Democratic candidates tried to stop him, but his plan worked. By the time of the convention, he had enough support to win the nomination on the first ballot. In the general election, Carter defeated President Ford by almost 2% of the popular vote. He lost in the West and Middle West, but won the South and Northeast. President Carter believed strongly in human rights. He hoped he could use his new position to support human rights throughout the world. On this and other issues, he was not afraid of being criticized when he believed he was right. For example, he believed it was right for the United States to end its control of the Panama Canal. He won congressional support for treaties to give control to Panama by the year 2000. He believed it was right to give diplomatic recognition to Communist China. And he believed it was right to continue negotiations with the Soviet Union about limiting nuclear weapons, even though he denounced human rights violations there. In 1979, Carter and Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev signed the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, known as SALT II. However, Carter decided not to send the treaty to the Senate for approval after the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan later that year. One of the finest moments of Carter's presidency took place at Camp David. That is the holiday home of American presidents. There, in March 1979, President Anwar Sadat of Egypt met with Prime Minister Menachem Begin of Israel. They signed a peace treaty, ending 30 years of war between their countries.
We are privileged to witness tonight a significant achievement in the cause of peace, an achievement none thought possible a year ago, or even a month ago, an achievement that reflects the courage and wisdom of these two leaders.
Both men said the treaty would not have been possible without President Carter's help. President Carter was not as successful in dealing with the economy. High unemployment and inflation continued. The federal deficit increased, although he had promised to end it. And there was a shortage of gasoline. The shortage resulted when oil-producing countries limited production and exports. Carter urged American companies to develop new sources of energy in addition to oil. He said the United States needed to do this because it could not always depend on getting enough oil from other countries.
This intolerable dependence on foreign oil threatens our economic independence and the very security of our nation. The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never. From now on, every new addition to our demand for energy will be met from our own production and our own conservation. The generation-long growth in our dependence on foreign oil will be stopped dead in its tracks right now.
During the gasoline shortage, Americans had to wait in long lines to buy fuel. They did not like it and were angry. Many were even more angry about a different situation. Like the gasoline shortage, it was a result of actions in another distant place.
Good evening. The U.S. Embassy in Tehran has been invaded and occupied by Iranian students. The Americans inside have been taken prisoner.
On November 4, 1979, Muslim extremists in Iran seized the American Embassy in Tehran. They took many hostages, including more than 60 Americans. The extremists said they were punishing the United States for being friendly with ousted Iranian leader Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The extremists refused to negotiate. They refused to release the hostages. In early April 1980, President Carter broke off diplomatic relations with Iran. He then ordered American military forces to try to rescue the hostages in Tehran. The operation failed. A sandstorm caused two of the aircraft to crash into each other. They went down in the desert hundreds of kilometers away. The failed rescue attempt had a major effect on the presidency of Jimmy Carter. Many Americans felt it showed that he could not do the job. Their respect for him continued to decrease as the hostages continued to be held. Other things were beginning to go wrong, too. The president's younger brother, Billy, admitted receiving a large amount of money from Libya. He took the money in exchange for supporting Libyan interests with American lawmakers. His mistake was that he did not list his name as a representative of a foreign government. In 1980 was a presidential election year in the United States. President Carter was expected to be the candidate of the Democratic Party, but his chances were almost ruined because of the situation in Iran. Carter hoped that concern for the hostages would unite the country behind him. Instead, support turned to blame. Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts believed he could defeat Carter for the nomination. Kennedy won several important Democratic primary elections. But that was not enough. The party renominated Carter. Kennedy offered Carter his support, but not very strongly. This left the party divided. The Republicans got ready to win back the White House. They hoped to do it with a strong appeal to American voters. The appeal came from a man who would become one of America's most popular presidents, Ronald Reagan. That will be our story next week. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.